Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests today are Steve McDonald of Channel 2 News and Sean Dugan of the Alaska Dispatch Anchorage Daily News. Steve, there's a lot of election news 60 days before the primary. Let's start with the electoral process itself. A federal judge, Sharon Gleason, says the state must do a better job of translating the ballot into native languages.
Yep, that's right. This is the result of a lawsuit that was filed on behalf of a couple of villages in western Alaska, a couple of villages in the interior, and on behalf of a couple of Alaska Native elders. There are a lot of folks living in the villages that English isn't their first language. They speak Yupik or another native language. They feel that they're not getting enough information from the state regarding election information and election pamphlets. It's not equal to what English-speaking people would normally get. So they have filed the suit asking for more translation of election material. Judge Gleason, a U.S. District Court judge, a federal judge, agreed and offered a preliminary ruling that said the state isn't complying, isn't doing an adequate job of providing election information in native languages, and basically said you're violating these people's constitutional rights by not providing information to all Alaskans. The state said, no, we are doing an adequate job. The state argued that this is largely historically an oral language, not a written language, not like Spanish, where you would have writing materials and things like that in Spanish. Judge Gleason said, no, this is all Alaska Natives, all Americans are protected under the Constitution of the United States, and they have the right to vote, and therefore they have the right to have equal opportunities to learn about what's on the ballot.
Similarly, a Justice Department spokesman, Tony West, says the state must improve actual ballot access for Alaska Natives and improve the turnout.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, this is something that the Department of Justice got into just like about a week or two ago, I reckon, and it took umbrage over a comment that the state made saying that it was doing an adequate job of getting people to the polls. And
this is some
like
of the
that.
Fallout of the reversal of the Voting Rights Act by the Supreme Court. Right?
That's right. And that's all it stems from that. And so the Department of Justice got involved here and became a party in the suit. And is pushing the state to do a better job of getting voter turnout. And Julie Kitka had an op-ed piece in the Anchorage Daily News, Alaska Dispatch, whatever it is going to be.
The newspaper.
She laid out her opinion and just said voter turnout in a number of villages is falling by 30-20% over the years because people there feel disenfranchised.
You wanted to add the comment?
Yeah, a couple things. Absolutely in line with what Steve was saying, and just a couple examples. So in 2010, and I'm sorry, I don't know the village, the villages where this happened, but the state translated some of the ballots into Yupik. Well, the person that did the translation was an academic, not a native Yupik speaker. And so the translation came out, and it was for the parental consent law for abortion. Instead of saying, should a doctor consult with the parents before offering a minor child an abortion, in Yupik, it was asking the voter for permission for their child to get pregnant. So it's kind of a big difference. And that's where the language part of the case comes from. Holder cited some access problems, and these are things that could only happen in rural Alaska. In Kasiglik, for instance, Holder said that, well, one of the problems is there's a river that runs through the middle of town, and they only have one ballot machine. And so they make it available on one, there's no bridge. And so they make it available on one side of the town for the people without boats for a few hours, and then they put it on a boat, and they take it across the river to the other side of town. And these are some of the examples he's citing of things that we need to do a better job on in the state.
Steve, I'm going to take up something here with you.
Sure.
That I did a little research, and the 2012 election, there were 9 House districts, Alaska House districts, State House districts, in which the turnout was less than 40%. 5 were in Anchorage, 2 were in Fairbanks, and 2 were in rural Alaska. One was in Kodiak, the other was in Bethel. Then if you look more closely at turnout here in Anchorage, The worst turnout in the state for a House district was 29% in East Anchorage District, a Muldoon district. At the precinct level, military precincts usually have the worst turnout, as you know, sometimes 5 or 10%.
For non-presidential
elections. And I checked this out. Mountain View, there are two districts which were in my home district that I vote in. In 12, two of Mountain View's four precincts had less turnout than Ambler, Anituvik Pass, Barrow, Buckland, Kivalina, Kobeck, Shugnak, Wainwright, and I stopped counting at that place. Yeah. So there's a sort of a question here that a lot of these rural precincts, undoubtedly they could do better. We want to encourage people to vote, but some of the problem is right here in Anchorage where people, for whatever reason, don't participate.
Boy, you know, in some of those places that you mentioned, Mountain View, Muldoon area, there's a high transient rate. People are moving quite a bit. I mean, we've talked about this on this program regarding the Anchorage School District, how they see students moving sometimes several times during the course of a school year. So transition of people moving around, that may be part of it. Economics may be another part. People may be working two jobs. People may be working a swing shift of 3 to 11. It's not conducive for them to cast a ballot. There's a lot of different reasons out there. And there's voter apathy. I mean, that's everywhere. And that's a real shame because that's the only way people are going to get change, and that is to cast a ballot and become involved in our democracy. When the city was talking about, well, we're going to improve turnout by moving the city election from April to November or whatever, that's nothing. That's not going to do anything. It may help a little bit, but I think it's also going to just frustrate a lot of people as well. Times are changing, and people need to be able to maybe mail in their ballots or maybe access their ballots like they do in Washington State via internet. That's being done now, and they have very high voter turnout in Washington State because of this. So this is where we've got to, you know, just take off the blinders and really look at technology. That's how people are communicating these days.
Anything you want to add, Sean?
Well, no, Steve's absolutely right. And if you want to really dig down into the numbers, it's no more evident of voter apathy and the problems of getting people to the polls than when you look at a city election when it's not held in concurrence with a state election or it's not a presidential year. We're lucky to get 20-25%. That's one in four people making the decisions for everyone else.
And I believe in the Mississippi U.S. Senate contest, which was just held, a primary election, the turnout was something like 17%. So it's this is something that's all over the country.
Right. Yeah, not just here.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And it comes down to the well-organized campaign. I mean, you can't, you know, you don't fault the candidates if they're smart. And frankly, I think that's what Joe Miller did in 2010 against Lisa Murkowski.
Yeah,
he had a motivated base. He got them out to the polls, and he won.
Yeah, it's become
smart.
Far more important to turn out the people that already support you than
right,
to try and
right,
change
mm-hmm,
people's
right.
minds during an election.
Yeah. Okay, we need to move on. Sean, here's an issue that's becoming a hearty perennial.
Yeah.
The King Cove Road, or proposed vote road. Mm-hmm. What's the latest?
Well, it's like the forget-me-not of Alaskan politics.
The state flower.
So the people that live in King Cove, it's a small community down in southwest Alaska. They have a small airstrip and it's an area where the weather's frequently foggy and windy, and it's not conducive to landing an airplane in there very often. They're just a little mile away from a really nice maintained airstrip at Cold Bay, but the only access they have really is by boat. They want to put a road, they want to punch it through about 22 miles of the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge. It goes through about 11 miles of what is now eelgrass. They had a land swap approved by Congress and the EPA, Sally Jewell. At the
Interior Department.
Thank you. Yes, Interior Department basically vetoed it. Said that the Interior Department was going to allow that to happen. That they need to look at alternatives. They famously tried a millions of dollars hovercraft that wasn't in operation very well. And people in King Cove say, you know, while you're worried about eelgrass and the birds, the eiders and the other birds that nest there, people are dying here.
So they've gone to court with a suit. And what are they claiming?
Well, they're claiming that the Interior Department is not addressing their concerns. They're putting the concerns of the land over the people, and that they're actually very, very frustrated. The native groups that filed this lawsuit look at it as kind of their last resort. They've had several meetings with Administrator Jewell or Secretary Jewell, and even recently this spring they went. She last year she came here. This spring they went to Washington, D.C., and after every meeting her message seems to be, well, the road's not a good idea, give me other alternatives. And there really are few other alternatives, and the ones that have been tried have kind of failed. And so they feel like their claims are falling on deaf ears.
Okay, Steve, Buccaneer, the oil drilling firm, files for bankruptcy. Buccaneer seemed very promising.
Yep.
But it's a no-go.
Well, yeah, this is unfortunate. This is an Australia-based company owned by an Australian company. They have a headquarters in North America down in Texas, so this is where they filed their bankruptcy action. They said they have debts between $50 and $100 million. They only have about $50,000 in assets. By what some people in the industry have said, they said that Buccaneer is always playing it right on the edge financially. They took advantage of the tax incentives that the state offered up for Cook Inlet, millions of dollars in incentives. And by all counts, again, by the industry, they say that the state incentives have really provided a real motivation for oil industry, the oil companies to get into Cook Inlet, and it's become rejuvenated again. So Buccaneer took advantage of some of those tax incentives. It brought a jackup rig called the Endeavor up here, but it had to go back to Singapore for a lot of upgrades and things like that. It never really worked the way it was supposed to. They're paying thousands of dollars a week, if not a day, to keep these rigs idle. It just never played out right for Buccaneer. The state says, sorry that it didn't work out. It shouldn't harm us in any way in terms of gas supplies. This is the summer, so
is the state on the hook for any money here, or is that to be argued about later?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure how much, because ADA, the Alaska Industrial Development Authority, had a stake in this in some way. And so so far, the ADA hasn't really said very much about its role in all of this. But again, the gas supplies should be fine. There's an overabundance of natural gas right now.
For the moment. Yeah.
And things look a little more promising. And so the state's kind of downplaying the loss of Buccaneer. As far as the ADA question, I'm not sure exactly. That's going to play out a little bit
more. We're going to get more on that.
Yeah.
Sean, Republican Senate candidate Joe Miller is back in the news, but not for his political views. For his complaint about the Alaska State Troopers, or at least somebody who's talking to the state troopers. Mm-hmm. I know you've not covered Joe Miller all the time, but you're familiar with the issues here.
I am, and familiar with being from Fairbanks. I'm familiar with Mr. Miller myself. It appears, at least from what Mr. Miller is saying, that he was driving down the road in a truck with some campaign signs on the back, Joe Miller for U.S. Senate, and he said that another vehicle, I believe it was an SUV, did a hard break in front of him for some reason. And then shortly thereafter, the troopers lit him up and said that they had received a ready report, which is report every drunk driver on 911. Somebody had claiming that the person in his truck was driving erratically and drunk. They issued him a ticket for a broken
taillight. Yes.
And as Mr. Miller points out, this is the second time in about a week that someone driving a truck with his campaign signs has been pulled over by the Alaska State Troopers. It happened to his son a few days earlier, I believe, in the same vehicle. So there are those that believe that maybe he's being targeted by people that don't like him politically. But it seems odd that driving down the road in a truck with campaign signs would make you the target of drunk driving complaints, but maybe that's where we are.
And the troopers, basically, their explanation that was detailed in the paper was we were just doing our job and responding to what
Absolutely.
We considered an everyday activity.
Yeah, well, when somebody calls a ready report in, you want the troopers to follow up on it, right? So, there's no fault there. It's just whether or not people are trying to make it hard for
Steve,
them.
Steve, here's one thing it occurred to me as we were talking about this. Joe Miller wants to be in the news. He wants to make news. You're a candidate for the U.S. Senate. You would like to get some free media, but about your views, about what you intend to do, about why you deserve to win the election. But this is another one of those kind of strange things where he's calling attention to himself. It almost seems I mean, let's say this is all true. What do you get out of complaining?
Well, I think he feels that the media hasn't been very kind to him from the old, from dating back to the 2010 Senate race. He feels that he's gotten an unfair shake from the media, and I'm not really sure what motivated him to come out with this particular story, but I think it's, you know, I think he feels that there is there's a movement out there somewhere, and I'm just speculating here. There's a movement
out
there to get
him. Well,
this
is some version of what he said before in different places. Somebody's out to get me.
Somebody's out to get me. Yeah, and this whole thing with again dating back to the 2010 election, he there's some hard feelings there. They're still, and they still linger. And I don't know if he felt that. Well, this is going to come out anyway, so I'm going to take the offensive.
Thing we should say, in fairness to Miller, he was put off by the fact that the troopers had TV equipment, and that was supposed to be for Alaska State Troopers?
Right, yeah, they were being trailed by the crew from the National Geographic show, Alaska State Troopers, and I believe that the same crew was with him when they pulled his son over, too. So, but I think Steve's right. He brings up a good point. And not speculating on Mr. Miller's motives or talking about this, but one of the effects of this is that I think it just further fires up his base. Mm-hmm. You know, these are people who believe he got the shaft in 2010 and that there's a concerted effort out there among the media and the powers that be to get him. And I think this is another example where you can say, you know, this is the work of those who don't want to see me ascend to the Senate.
On the other hand, I'd say to Steve, he can fire up his base all he wants. Everybody can only vote once. He needs these sort of middle-class Republicans who are in the middle of the road. But he needs some of them anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, the rule of thumb, in certainly in presidential races, and I think in all races statewide, you know, if you're Republican or if you're a Democrat, let's say if you're Republican here, you know, you appeal to the base in the primary, which would be more
run to the
voters
center,
to the right. And then if you survive the primary and get into the general, then you go to the center. And the same thing. You know, Democrats maybe will go to the left and then they go to the center maybe. But you need a broader base, I think, to win a statewide election. I don't know how this plays with voters who are maybe more down the middle.
Find out. Once again, I'm Michael Carey, and I'm here with Steve McDonald and Sean Dugan. Steve, Republican Senate challenger Dan Sullivan offers a peace treaty of sorts to incumbent Mark Begich. What is the Alaska agreement, agreement, and what was Senator Begich's response?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if our viewers here have seen these ads, or these political ads, I guess, that have been on TV, a couple of them here and there. Actually, if you just watch TV.
They're on your computer.
Yeah.
You can't
escape
them.
That's
everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
They come after you. They will search you out if you haven't seen the TV. You unplug the TV, they'll still pop up. A lot of ads from outside groups. This is going to be, by all counts, a record amount of money spent on this U.S. Senate race.
Absolutely.
Here in Alaska. This will be a record for the state of Alaska, if it isn't already. And so there's lots of outside groups, from the Citizens United suit and the Supreme Court ruling, that have weighed in.
Which essentially gave us unlimited spending or something close to it.
Yeah, thank you very little. And it's just been, wall-to-wall ads. And one group attacks Mark Begich, the other group attacks Dan Sullivan. Thankfully for Mead Treadwell, I think maybe for Mead, he's not being hit by these things. So it's just Sullivan and Begich who've been the targets. Mr. Sullivan comes out and says, "Okay, I'm asking Mark to go tell the people who are supporting him and attacking me to knock it off, and I'll do the same thing for the folks who are attacking Mark and supporting Dan Sullivan. And if you fail to do so, then half the TV ad buy money will be donated."
Right.
To
I can
a
say
charity.
I really don't want to put all this trashy stuff on television or have my allies do it.
Yeah.
Look what I'm forced to do in this situation.
Well,
please.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you, is this a gimmick?
Well, I mean, if it is, it's a smart one. One of the main criticisms that have been levied at both candidates, Mark Begich and Dan Sullivan, and especially Dan Sullivan, was that he was outside Dan. He was Ohio Dan, and this is outside money. And, you know, we xenophobic Alaskans don't like to be told what to do by outsiders. And so, I think this is a way for him to positively address the support that he's getting from outside. Certainly Mark Begich is getting outside support. They've both been propped up as the front runners in a race where they're not yet competing against each other. Let's not forget that, and all the money's being spent there. So, but it does... is it a gimmick? I don't know. If Begich had accepted, he would have had to have followed through, certainly. I don't know if there's a way to accept. One of the things about these issue ads, as they're called, is that you can't coordinate with them. I mean, in the past, Senator Murkowski, other people, even Senator Begich in the past, has asked groups to knock it off, but you can't stop them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what kind of teeth it would have had. Basically, what it would have done is drain the local campaign coffers of both men, because as every time this ad comes up, if they agreed to it, they'd have to fork over more money than they got to a charity. So I don't think accepting does either. So
let's try something else here briefly.
Yeah.
When I first heard that Sullivan made this proposal to Begich, I thought this is a sign of weakness. This is a sign that Begich's negative advertising, the negative advertising from all of his allies, is really getting to him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there may be some of that. But at the same time, I thought, well, I can see the advantage of this. And if you look at it this way, I'm wondering if maybe the real message is for Treadwell and Miller, I'm the presumptive nominee.
Right.
Isn't that what he's telling them?
Well, he, in a way he is, but Mark Begich told them that months and months ago, or the Democrats anyway, have targeted Sullivan as the guy to beat in November, even before we get to the primary. Right. And you know, there's been some speculation that maybe they're picking the opponent they think they have the best chance at beating. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot, frankly, to work out. We're not even at the primary yet.
So we got 60 days. Final thoughts
on
this?
First of all, Sean's absolutely right. They can't talk. They can't plan. They cannot go to these outside groups
and say
they're not allowed to do that. Now, he can do what he did and take the moral high ground and say, you know, I'm against these things. They shouldn't be involved here and we should stop it. And that's a good point. Is he getting bashed and bruised on these things? It's like, or is he hearing a lot of complaints from people saying, I wish these ads would stop because they're messing up my TV viewing or whatever. I'm just tired of seeing these negative ads. But it's been done before. This is not a new claim or a new pitch. It was done in a Massachusetts Senate race a few years back. And I think
Elizabeth Warren and Scott Brown.
I believe that they accepted, they came to this truce. I don't know if it worked. But.
Okay. Sean, something completely different. The international chain, a Hard Rock Cafe, is opening in Anchorage, and they're looking for employees.
Yep.
How's it going?
Well, they say it's going well. They did have a job fair a couple weeks ago at the Egan Center. They were trying to hire 150 positions. With a big name like the Hard Rock, as you can imagine, a lot of people applied. But they had to extend the job fair for a few days after that. And one of the reasons maybe is that unemployment is pretty low in Anchorage. It's difficult to find employees, especially employees in the service industry, which is one of the fastest growing sectors, or the retail sector, they call it, in the economy. I think we added 400 jobs in 2013 just in Anchorage, which is the first time we've added more than 100 jobs in a decade. So retail, think about all the big box stores coming to town, Cabela's and Bass Pro Shops, and you've got all these restaurants, Texas Roadhouse, and you had Olive Garden open up, Chili's is back.
That's correct.
So they're all competing for the same pool of workers, basically. And so it can be difficult to hire. Yeah, Hard Rock might have a little bit of an advantage in that it's a well-known international chain. It's got kind of a music kitsch to it. But even they were finding it a little bit difficult to hire enough people. That's a sign of a good economy, frankly.
Thank you. Steve, Democratic lawmakers challenged Parnell's tax revision, Senate Bill 21. What's the nature of their latest sally through their press conference?
They want they want the governor to put in writing and guarantee that SB 21, the year-old tax law for the oil industry, is actually going to up production and up revenues for the state. And they want the governor to call a special legislative session so lawmakers can basically put this guarantee into law, and they want Governor Parnell to sign it, and a written guarantee. This is Bill Welikowski, who is East Side Anchorage senator, and then Hollis French, who was West Side senator in Anchorage.
And now running for lieutenant governor.
And now he's a late gov candidate, right. So they made this call, and they've been outspoken critics of SB 21 from the get-go on this. So,
and they did it not expecting Parnell to say that's a great idea. How soon can we get started?
Yeah, really, I'm surprised that he didn't say, yeah. So the governor's folks put out a statement that just said this is just electioneering, election year gimmickry and and lawmakers, Republican lawmakers came out and pretty much condemned the same.
Okay, we got about a minute. One last question. Yep. Sean, headline. Family sue driver charged with DUI murder of two teens.
Yeah.
This is a profoundly sad story. Tell us about it.
It is. And it's really a story of what happens when you drink and drive at the end of the day. Stacy Allen Graham, a 32-year-old local kid, was driving allegedly intoxicated on August 9th. He jumped the curve over there off Abbott Road near Diamond and plowed into two girls, allegedly. And both girls were killed. They were 15-year-olds on their way home from a school shopping trip. He had been at a company-sponsored golf tournament earlier in the day. Alcohol was served. He may have been at a bar or restaurant after that where alcohol was served. I believe police said he blew three times the legal limit, also had marijuana in his system. But the family says it's suing so that they're suing the chain there, from the golf course on up, including the company involved, saying that they all contributed to this tragedy and their ideas to stop them. But, you know, regardless of what happens at the end of the day, you have two dead girls. You've got a guy potentially going to jail for many, many years who's got two kids of his own. And it's just another sad tale in a string of drunk driving stories here in Alaska.
That's the end of our tale. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, viewers, for joining us. And we'll see you next week right here on Alaska Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.